The rainstorm that inundated Louisiana this week was a 1-in-500-year weather event, which doesn't mean it can only happen every 500 years. It means it's rare. But there have been around 8 around the country this year alone. The drought in California has been super fuel for fires. And this week, NASA announced July was the warmest single month on record since they started keeping track in 1880. So is this year a climate change tipping point? Eric Holthaus is a meteorologist for Slate and co-host of the podcast Warm Regards. Eric, start with this storm in Louisiana. How unusual was it?
Sure. So weather balloons twice a day at every National Weather Service office in the country measure the content of water vapor in the clouds in the atmosphere above where they were launched. And at this moment, I think it was Thursday morning or Friday morning last week, the atmosphere above southern Louisiana was among the wettest that has ever been measured there.
Explain that, because you think, well, it's either raining, wet's 100% wet, mm-hmm. or it's not. I mean, what do you mean by that?
So as the planet gets warmer because of greenhouse gases, warmer air can hold more water vapor. This is a basic tenet of atmospheric physics. And you can kind of test this, you know, on a warm day when you're in air conditioning, you see condensation on the windows if you're inside and it's really humid outside. Mm-hmm. So that's water vapor that's just being squeezed out of the atmosphere, and that's exactly what happened in Louisiana. Is that the Gulf of Mexico right now is record warm. We have 90 degree water temperatures down there. And this storm system sort of acted like a funnel for that warm, wet air to be pushed and concentrated right over southern Louisiana for days.
Yeah. But was this something that scientists, researchers, meteorologists predicted? You know, this idea that as the water and the air warms, we're going to have more extreme rain.
Exactly. No, we've been predicting this for decades. And when I say we, I mean the entire scientific community. It's not a controversial result, really, that as the planet warms, that we'll start to see more extremes in precipitation on both ends. Mm-hmm. You know, evaporation also increases with temperature, the rate of evaporation. So we're getting drier dries and wetter wets. And we're seeing that, you know, at the same time on the other side of the country, we're seeing this sort of really rapidly advancing forest fires in California.
Because of how the drier dry out there. Mm-hmm. And then hotter hot. Talk about the notion that July, hottest month on record. But for sometimes the average observer, it can feel like, well, you said last month was hot too. You know, where would you put this new news? How big is this new news about July?
Yeah, and at some point it gets a little bit monotonous when July was the 15th consecutive record-setting month on a global basis. So part of this is a result of the El Niño that's just passed. We still don't totally understand how this happens, but it seems that El Niño can sort of motivate warm water that's being stored in the surface layers of the ocean, and that just sort of pours out into the atmosphere during El Niño years.
And that, as we know it, is a natural occurrence.
Yeah, that's a natural occurrence, but it's also an active area research of how this El Niño process might change with increasing global temperatures. But, you know, the bottom line is that we have a different atmosphere now. I think that's the best way to think about it, is that we have a different base conditions. We have a different playing field for weather events to happen in. And it's not so much that, oh, is this flood or is this fire linked to climate change or is it caused by climate change? I think that's the wrong question at this point. I think we have a different fundamental expectation for what we can expect now.
I found myself thinking the other day, oh gosh, you know, I happen to love the heat, but I mean, people were actually struggling to breathe here on the East Coast and when temperatures were over 100 and the humidity was, you know, almost 100 as well. And I started thinking, well, what happens if in 50 years, you know, I mean, are you already eyeing super dangerous temperatures?
Well, I'm here speaking from Tucson, Arizona, too. So yeah, I mean, we had among the warmest days on record here in Arizona earlier this year. But that's when it starts raising, you know, big red flags in your mind, is saying that there are fundamental thresholds to the temperatures that humans can withstand. And there's been some research to say that we're talking about the water content over Louisiana last week. Once that water content hits a point to where your body can no longer sweat to cool down, then you've reached the point of, you know, the upper threshold of humans being able to exist outside. And this is sort of sounds like science fiction stuff, but it's actually in predictions baked in for potentially our lifetimes, you know, towards the end of the century. You know, hopefully we'll live that long, but our children probably definitely will. It's something that it's really hard to convey in our daily news cycle when we have, you know, so much else to go on, that we have something huge that's happening right now and we're locking in further change.
Yeah. Well, in December, almost every country in the world met in Paris and agreed to limit average global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and they'd have to do that by different means. That's considered the threshold for dangerous climate change impacts. Are we there? Are close enough?
Well, we are there. You know, if you factor in the warming that's still in the pipeline, and, you know, as I was saying, the upper layers of the ocean can store heat for decades, and it takes a while for that to get squeezed out into the atmosphere. And so we have committed to a temperature rise of roughly 1.5 degrees. We're right at that point right now. So what does it mean that we're you know, essentially past that tipping point? That's what the scientists are trying to figure out right now. So there's still time to prevent a worst case scenario. And I think Paris probably did that. You know, those ultra high business as usual scenarios are probably off the table at this point because of Paris.
Yeah.
But we're still locked in to something well above that 1.5 or even possibly above the 2-degree threshold that's been discussed for decades now.
Rito Rudy, who's project manager at NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, who oversaw these recent findings of the hottest July, said, if you want to have a planet that looks similar to what we have now, one that's habitable, bet we better change our ways and stop building up CO2 concentration in the atmosphere. Richard Primack, biology professor at Boston University, said, even if it gets just a little warmer and just a little drier in some places, agricultural systems could collapse. Maybe it's that they can't hear it, but, you know, some still don't believe it. What would you say?
Well, there's a mismatch between our human experience and what science can tell us about the future. So in thinking about what it might mean for, you know, a wholesale collapse of ecosystems or agricultural systems or, you know, the loss of all coastal cities on Earth. You know, these are things that could potentially happen in our lifetimes. And these are things that are, in some cases, being locked in right now. And it's really hard to convey as a fact things that feel like science fiction. I struggle with that every day, to not sound like a crazy person talking about this stuff, because it doesn't sound like it's real or could be real, but it is.
How is the insurance industry going to have to change to adapt to global warming?
That's a great question. I think that insurance is a tool that is underestimated because it's boring, you know. But these are people whose job it is to protect us from risk. And that's exactly what climate change is adding risk into a system that is a lot of ways fragile. You know, we saw how quickly the global economy was on the brink just a few years ago in the Great Recession. And it's not a stretch to say that something like climate change could eventually put the global economy at risk again. And we need to start preparing for a risk management system to help those people on the front lines that don't have a nest egg, that are living in vulnerable areas, not necessarily of their own choosing, but maybe because that's where their families always live. That's where their great-grandpa grew up. And they're not just going to uproot their lives because, you know, FEMA says now you're in the 500-year floodplain, and that, you know, by the way, you just had 2 500-year floods in the last 16 months. You know, yeah, within a few decades, we're going to start to see, you know, clear day flooding in places like Miami and New York City, where the water will come above levels we could have seen in previous hurricanes. They're just happening on high tide.
What's the one thing you would want people to start doing right now because of this, the new record in July, this historic rainfall in Louisiana, the drought in California? One thing.
One thing is talk about it. I think the more we can talk about it with our family and friends, just open up a conversation, see where other people are, I think you will be surprised at how many other people you know that are as concerned as you are. It doesn't really help to be sort of stuck in pessimism and despair and to think that we are going to have to sort of work together at some point anyway. It may as well be now. I'm starting to sound like an activist.
You are a meteorologist for Slate, also co-host of the podcast Warm Regards, forced into activism because of what you're seeing. Eric Holthouse, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's talk about it. Your thoughts, especially if you're listening in Baton Rouge or Southern California or in New England, where crops are also dying from drought, are welcome.